The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to another exciting episode of Nailed It on Guardian 96.9 FM. My name is Leonard Sands.
And my name is Debbie Deal.
And today, I'm very excited to have a very special guest in the studio. Now, I will give you full disclosure. I remember when I was dating my wife. And
you better remember when you were dating
I do remember when I was dating my wife. And there was one person that she said, I got to make sure you meet Mr. Smith because, he's like a, pseudo father to me. Uh-huh. And I'm thinking to myself, I got to make this old staunch dude who's all stuffy. And I'm if you know me, Debbie, I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
So anyway, but I got to know him and he's not like the guy that she presented him to be. He's more similar to me.
She had a different relationship with him. She had like a fatherly kind
of. He was her boss.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So he was like, you do it this way, you do it that way. But I met him and we got into conversations later on. And I'm like, this is not the guy that I should have been all watching my P's and Q's with. Anyhow, so we're going to get into that a little later in the show. So it's a very, very, very good guest we have in studio today. But before we get into it, and I always open in the show with what is topical in my mind. Now, I've seen it, and I tried to stay away from it, Mrs. Smith. The press has reached out to me about it. I declined to comment about it as the president of the Contractors Association. But today, I think because we're in that climate, it's important for us to understand a couple of things. Let me be very, very transparent with my commentary right now. Politicians will promise a lot of things, okay? It is your job to scrutinize what they promise. Now, when the first idea about 5,000 homes was circulated, I said nothing.
That's one home every day.
But beyond that, let me say this. If you could find the money for it, it's no problem. Let me talk about the money part. See, the other candidate from the government side, PLP, is talking about the capacity to build it. That's not what my challenge is. I only want to talk about what it takes. Currently, the Ministry of the Department of Housing has a budget per home, including land development and delivering that home, at $200,000. Okay? Take that $200,000 and extrapolate that over 5,000. That's your budget. Historically, this 5 years, the government of Bahamas has only expended $20 million on housing and have produced under 250 homes. I know this from the Minister of Housing, who we went on a trip to India together, and we talked, and he gave me the details. So I know the numbers. 5,000, you're going to be north of $100 million. I'm not the guy to tell you you can't spend that, but that would become the first time in the history of this country that a government, doesn't matter what government, a have taken a giant leap in providing housing to that point. So the only thing I would say is, be really, really deliberate about what you're saying you're going to do, because that's the number you're going to have to meet.
And are they going to build them floating? Because I just don't know if we have enough land available to build
enough.
All those.
We do have enough. We could
Grand Bahama does.
We could sit the 5,000 homes in Western Province easily.
Okay.
Easily. It's not taking up the land. Land is not the issue. The $100 million is the issue. The $100 million it require is the issue. So, well, to see Alan Johnsons and all the other guys want to call and talk about all kind of stuff, my only issue is one thing. I'm a construction man from the beginning. It comes down to money. The previous administration that's in right now spent $20 million. You're talking with 5X that number. That's all I want to say on that topic. So let me leave that alone because we already got calls.
And I want you to read the numbers.
We already got calls. So let's get this party started early because what we're going to talk about leads into that. So Mr. Smith is going to tell you about exposure. I'm prefacing what he's going to talk about. And he's going to talk about being wise business people. This is what Debbie and I try to talk about from the standpoint of the BCA in construction, being wise business people. So the numbers I want you to call in are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259 from the Family Islands, 242-300-5720, and BTC text line, we love BTC, 422-4796, 4796. I want to thank Mr. Del Maro Duncombe, a good Toastmaster buddy of mine who heads up BTC corporate relations, some fancy titles. Del Maro, thank you for BTC and Guardian Radio making sure the texters could get in. And I do have my favorite texting companion that I know I'm going to get a text message for this afternoon, Mr. Mixology, going to send us a text message. So let's get into it. I want to first introduce our guest who is a professional, and I know him from the compliance space. That's the first place where I know Mr. Smith. But I will allow him to introduce himself. Mr. Smith, please introduce yourself to the listening audience.
Well, thank you for having me here this afternoon. I'm a financial professional, having been in banking for 40 plus odd years.
But I think, stellar career.
I think for the purposes today, I think it's important to note that I am also the child of a contractor. So I started out very young in construction.
Drum roll, Mr. Medusa, if you have one, please. I love that.
From
our first child of a contractor we have here. I love it.
From swimming sand, swimming in the septic tank spot, and being mason helper, throwing blocks up a story, all those kinds of things.
I love it.
So I have a bit of knowledge about construction. I won't call my father's name.
Don't call it there.
No.
We probably know who he is.
So anyway, that's me. In financial services, almost every aspect
Gold
of financial
Circle,
services.
They were Smiths.
Notice way before them. This is in the day before Carl Dietrich.
What? Oh, you went back. This is 50s construction.
Yes.
Wow.
Where my father would have built a lot of the clinics and stuff on the islands, etc.
Okay. Continue.
So that's me. Currently, I do consultancy for the most part in financial services. Mm-hmm. Pretty much I'm known as an operational guy and a problem solver.
Mm-hmm. So, why? Let me ask you a question, Mr. Smith. Let's get it right into it. You recognize, because that's your backdrop, right? And I know you from a compliance background. Not that that's the limit, but that's just part of what I know you as. Speak to our listening audience, and mostly our contractors who are listening today, the risk of contractors that you can identify? Because I know you looked at something and you identified some risks.
Yeah, well, if I go back in history a bit, right, particularly construction back in the day, you know, you would simply get somebody to say, I need a carpenter, I need a mason, I need a plumber, I need an electrician. And pretty much, things were done on a system for the most part. Persons tend to have been very capable in terms of, you know, what they were asked to do, because a lot of contractors and workmen back in the day went through more of an apprenticeship program, understood the ropes, what was needed, that kind of thing. but now things have actually changed. And I think the important point here is that as a Bahamian society in particular, we are becoming more litigious.
We are.
Right? So back in the day, you know, you may have a disagreement, but nobody, you know, said, hey, I'm going to sue you, for example. Mm-hmm. But that is very relevant nowadays.
Today we sue.
Yep. And also, your clientele, you know, would have changed.
Yeah.
You're not only dealing with, you know, someone you know who grew up, you know, around the corner from you and you could work it out.
No.
You're dealing with persons who you do not know.
And also persons who are from living outside the country that you actually do contracts for.
Yes.
I know Debbie and I have experience of clients who do not live here. Mm-hmm. They are expats or they have a summer home here. So you're not dealing with a local clientele anymore. Right. You're dealing with international people.
And that brings also international exposure as well. So you have local exposure, but you also have international exposure. And so one of the things I think it's important to note, because you're working in that kind of environment now, you know, you can get sued.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
What does it mean?
Okay. So what it means is, first of all, understanding that, let's say, for example, Leonard, you are the general contractor and you hire me as an electrician.
Electrician. Right? Yeah.
And I wired the house incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, there was a fire and somebody lost their life, right? The question now is who's responsible for that, right? I am and you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could be sued and you could be sued.
Of course.
Now, let's say you're Leonard Sands Construction Limited, right?
Okay, I'm Leonard Sands Construction Limited.
Limited.
Okay, right? Good. Let's go there.
And I am Smith Electrical Engineers. Trading as. Right? You do not have the same level of exposure that I would have.
Why?
Because you would be a limited liability company.
What does limited liability mean?
I'm glad you asked that question. So a company, first of all, what a company is.
Mm-hmm.
A company is a legal person, meaning it is no different than you, but separate from you. Okay.
Financially.
So financially and otherwise.
Separate.
Structurally, you're separate.
Separate.
It's a separate legal entity. The company could be sued. The company could do everything that Leonard can do in its name, in its corporate name.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What makes it limited is it's limited by shares. So the exposure is limited by shares. So for example, if we were sued for the poor electrical work and the resulting catastrophe, you would be limited to what's in your company.
Company's share portfolio.
Right. I would be exposed in terms of my house, my car, and the money in my bank.
So let me understand this. You're talking about if you're an electrician, you're personally exposed.
Yes.
And whatever you own personally is
up for grabs.
Wow.
Because he's not a limited.
Because I'm not a limited.
Not because he's an electrician.
No, not because.
I want to get that straight.
Yeah. No. Not because he's an electrician. Because his company isn't doing the work. Legally, he, the individual, is doing the work.
Right.
And this is what we try. And I'm so glad Mrs. Smith is on the show today to talk about it. Because I don't think many of our contractors understand what that means when they are operating as J. Smith Construction.
We only understand
trading us.
We only understand it when it happens.
When it happens. But it's too late once it happens.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. That's why people have gated communities, because it only happens after somebody in the neighborhood is killed or shot or raped or whatever. Yeah, we always wait till the end to do something.
Yeah, I was gonna put it in the Bahamian vernacular, and it's called taking chances.
Yeah.
I mean, we like to take chances. It's no different than driving a car without insurance or a driver's license, and it's not gonna happen to me until it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens then, once it happens, right? So, well, in financial services in particular, and in compliance as well, there's something called risk.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at what the risks are, you know, and then being risk adverse, for example. So you don't just go into it blindly. You consider what could go wrong.
What could go wrong?
And what do I do to mitigate something going wrong? Or what steps do I take? What corrective measures do I take if it actually goes wrong?
So let me put a point right there, Mr. Smith. Let me ask you a question. Because we and Debbie and I, we see a lot of people in construction. There are over, on our estimates, plus 10,000 persons actively operating construction companies. One of the things I wish they did, and I tell this to young people, I know a bunch of young people who I want to be a contractor. I wish I could tell them that there is an opportunity to make a great living and provide for your family. But there's a huge risk that you have to appreciate before opening a business. And Debbie and I, we've both gone through the experiences where we didn't get paid.
Where our materials were stolen.
Or we didn't get paid and we had to finish a job and we had to come out of pocket 30 and 40,000. We've all had the horror stories. And it happens more often than not. But how does someone appreciate the liability that they're also open to? Because we're not even talking about someone suing Debbie Deal.
We're just talking about the in and outs of business.
You're now talking about another layer of risk that someone has to, before you jump on this pool, say, I want to be a contractor. I think the conversation that Mrs. Smith is talking about, let me present you a full picture of what that means and how we could kind of best prepare you to get into that space.
Well, let me back up a little bit because right at the beginning, before we came on air, you were making the point about being a licensed contractor, right? Now, let me give the disclaimer. I am not an attorney. However, I am of mature age and have a lot of life experience. Yes. I won't call my age, but I have quite... I'm a senior citizen. Let me put it that way, right? So in terms of someone doing something and you're not licensed to do it, you are already in the red.
Let's start there.
You're already in the red because you're not licensed. I mean, if you think about it, we had people practicing dentistry here without a license. There's a problem. You could have someone driving a taxi without a license. Okay. So anyway, you could drive a car without a license, and there's a problem.
You certainly get a problem if you
being licensed is an important aspect, right? So I'm going to sort of rest that there, but let me get to the other point that I wanted to make. Again, back in the day, a lot of things were done laissez-faire. But nowadays, I think it's important to have contracts in place. And once you have a contract, there are legal obligations that you have to meet. I mean, I think most contractors know, you know, you got this retention amount. And if you don't finish on time, you have the penalty of whatever, a day, $1,000 a day or whatever and all of that. And actually, some contractors believe we're just so genteel and nice that no one's going to enforce it. Well, I have a personal experience where a contractor did that, and I enforced it, and they were surprised.
They were surprised that you enforced the contractual...
In terms of the time to completion, et cetera, and so on, right? And essentially, they lost the retainer. And the reality is, you know, people have businesses to run to, and people have obligations that they need to meet. So when you engage somebody to do something, you have to keep that in mind. And if there's a contractual arrangement... you need to meet the obligation. Otherwise, a classic example, again, I'm not an attorney, but lack of performance under contract, you in the red. Okay? So we need to keep that in mind, that contractual arrangements, I do believe, and maybe you could correct me, that we still have quite a bit of works that are undertaken without proper contracts in place.
Absolutely. Now, I know a stickler
We've
for
had
Debbie.
So many people call.
Debbie Deal will not start a job without you signing a contract, not Debbie.
Now, Debbie,
are you taking a job without signing a contract?
I'll talk to you about that later.
Hold on. Let me tell you. Let me break it down differently. What I mean is, you.
Well, yes, I do. I yes.
No, but hold on. I'm not talking about your 30-year relationship client.
Okay.
That's different. Okay. You meet me. I'm Joe Smith.
Okay.
Debbie built my wall.
First of all, I'm going to ask, are you financed by the bank?
Exactly.
I won't even take the job.
Debbie just showing up to your site with some blocks and what's not, and Debbie ain't going to, Debbie's not going to do that.
No.
You're not going to do that.
No.
I know that. Now, the client that she's been working for 30 years, who say, Debbie, I need you in the morning with 10 guys. You need to bust this hole out of this wall and create this office for you. All right, and you can send me the bill when you finish. That's different.
Yep.
That's relationship. The new guy pulling up the contemporary builders and say, hey, I want you to build my wall. Show up there on Monday. Debbie's not coming.
Oh, yeah. I would have
she's
to.
She's not going to be
I'd be
there.
Asking too many questions. They would leave because I'd ask too many questions.
So I'm
glad you used the example of the wall, because sometimes when you think contract, people think big job.
They think big job.
Right. But it could be a simple job in terms of doing some electrical work, rewiring a house. You should have a contract.
You should have a contract.
And also...
Make sure that the electricians are licensed in this country.
They are.
So make sure that your electrician is licensed, because otherwise...
They carry a lot of liability, electricians. Under our building code,
electricians
carry a lot of liability.
But I would say, and I'm glad you say that, because I think it's important also for contractors to be prepared to be transparent.
Okay? What do you mean by be prepared? Let's, we make an assumption that they're always going to be transparent.
No.
We make the assumption.
Because say, for example, the contractor might be putting themselves at risk if, you know, they let's say they are involving persons on the job who are not fully qualified, and you know, so you could have someone who's an apprentice who's not fully qualified, but are they properly supervised? See, that's the question. Mm-hmm. Is someone coming back and looking at
and them
and
sure
ensuring the quality of the
quality,
work?
Yeah.
Right. So in terms of being transparent, letting the client know exactly what's going to happen, when, and how it's going to happen, mm-hmm. and that, I think, sort of ring out a lot of the frustration that many clients would face. Mm-hmm. And if you could manage the relationship and the client is comfortable, you could avoid problems down the road. So it's not just about protecting, you know, your exposure or liability, is also properly managing the relationship to mm-hmm. avoid that. That's one way to mitigate it as well.
Yeah. Sometimes that's possible. Sometimes it's not.
Sometimes it's not. It's kind of tricky.
You do get some customers that are just, you know what they're going to do from the very get-go.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel it. You know they're going to try not to pay that last percentage and all that kind of
stuff. You kind of sense that.
They're going to find a million reasons why they don't have to pay you. You know, yeah. There are people like that.
But again, this is why contracts are important, because that's enforceable. Mm-hmm. You can't, I mean, again, let me make the disclaimer again. I'm not a lawyer, but there are legal steps that you could take with a contract so that person doesn't sort of walk away or end up just getting off the hook.
Yes. And then sometimes you have some customers that are so wealthy that they don't mind going to court because they've got more money,
than God.
And then they'll say, well, I'm not going to be on the island this time, so we have to postpone it again. And the person who is desperate for the final payment to make sure that they pay their suppliers and their subcontractors is the one who gets shafted.
Well, let me say, I know we have a thinking here that, you know, we have to eat, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
that is the prevailing thought. You got to eat.
Yeah, but the reality is you don't have to take every job.
No, I don't.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
You know, so if you're not comfortable with a relationship,
don't bother with it.
You know, I would say don't bother with it because situations could end up going beyond the contractual arrangement.
Yeah.
When frustration kicks in and all that kind of thing. So I think be selective in the jobs that you take
back
and what you think you're capable of.
When I was younger, I wanted to build everything.
Everything.
If somebody was clear on the lot, I wanted to know who owned that lot and what were they going to build.
And you're eager to get on that.
I was. You know, now I'm at the point where there's, like you say, there's only... No.
A handful of people that we work for.
Yeah.
Mr. Smith, let me ask you a question, and I want to get into it. So walk me through, if you are presenting a case to me as a new entrant into construction, present to me what your service would be in advising a new construction company.
Mm-hmm. Well, From step one.
Because I think that's the gist of what I think we don't have before persons create a construction company. Mm-hmm.
Well, I would approach it by first trying to understand the lay of the land.
Okay.
Because you could have someone who is an excellent contractor but a bad business person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true for every single profession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. I mean, you know, the word on the street is mechanics drive the worst cars. Right?
Debbie, you find that to be true?
Yeah. Well,
tell the truth.
I only take my vehicle to the
dealer where you
dealer
bought it
that
from.
I bought it from, because I don't want to deal with the other part. I don't want to have to go and try to find my car in the lot with 300 other cars that are stacked on top of each other.
But
they're very good mechanics, mind you.
They may be. I just can't do it any longer.
So anyway, in
I'm
advice.
Probably older than you, so I mean, my patience level is like
zero.
So in advising someone, you know, first determine the lay of the land.
Yeah.
You know, what that person brings to the table. Do they just want to be a contractor or they want to run a business?
A business.
Okay, because a construction company is a business. It's not about building the house. The contractor builds the house.
Yes.
But a construction company is a business. So then you have to assess, well, okay, what capabilities, personnel, whatever exists to run that company.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because once you, for example, hit over 100,000, you gotta keep books and records and all those kinds of things. And again, let me digress just a bit, because as a company, it's important to keep company business different from personal business.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a company,
commingling funds is not allowed.
Yeah, if you're running your construction company, mm-hmm. like this is for you to pay your bills. You know, you're paying your mortgage out of it. You're doing this. That's not running a business, no. And you no. have actually
broken the law.
No, you haven't broken the law, no. But you have exposed the company in a way that, you know, the court looking at it would say, well, there's no differentiation between you and the company. And,
yeah.
And so you lose some of the benefit of the company.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to the business part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say assess what the resources are. I would encourage someone running a business, whether it's a construction company, any other business, mm-hmm. to separate business from personal.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can pay yourself a salary, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. don't keep dipping in every time, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So get that part straight first. From the company perspective, in terms of running the business, I know sometimes people think, you know, I don't want to get involved with all this administrative stuff. Man, I just want to build a home. I want to whatever, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to be too concerned with payroll and, mm-hmm. and national insurance and safety in the workplace act and all these kinds of things. But guess what?
That's
the environment within which you work. So you need to know those things, mm-hmm. and be aware of those things. And if you feel that you don't have the capacity or desire to be involved in those things, you may have to hire yourself a good administrator to do those things for you.
Right?
Because at the end of the day, I would say, you know, you put your energy and talent where it's going to have the greatest return.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you were the best contractor and the worst person in terms of administration, mm-hmm. it's a waste of time for you to be bothered with administration, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. My analogy is that's like a gourmet chef flipping burgers. Your talent is being...
You know, one thing I do know in this industry is that I'll use the smaller contractors. They don't take a salary. Very few of them actually take a salary. Very few of them sit.
They just figure they'll just take whatever they need.
No, they don't even know that. They just take the money out of the account. That's exactly what they do. So basically, what happens is you really need to figure out. Okay, well, sorry. How much are all my bills going to cost me? How much my school fees and all my personal bills, all my business bills? How much is everything going to cost me? And then you have to decide from that. All right, what salary can I pay myself now? I may not be able to pay myself the salary that I would like to have, but I'm going to have to get more jobs and make more profit to be able to do that, right? But not taking a salary is one of the reasons that most businesses just go because what happens is back in the day, you'd have to write a check. Now you don't. You just swipe. And it wouldn't take long before that swiping has put you in a negative and you can't finish the jobs. So that's one thing that I do know does happen a lot.
Well, one of the things I would say to someone who's getting into the business is don't look at the business today. No. Look at the business tomorrow. Look ahead.
Yes.
Right. So focus on ahead. And if you focus on ahead, what that means is you ought to have some kind of business plan.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And you need to write it down. It can't be in your
it
head.
It can't be in your head.
All right. You need to write it down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe I'm starting out as a small, actually, let me go back. I know a friend of mine, he started over at Cavalier.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Back in the day,
just as a regular worker. Now he runs a construction company, massive, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to have a plan. I mean, if you want to stay at 20,000, 100,000, 200,000, I say you're in the wrong business, because you don't go into business to maintain. You go into business to meet a need and to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And so start with the future in mind. Have a business plan. To know what your expectations are, to know if you're hitting goals or not, or you're just sort of like doing, I guess, you know, they call it subsistence farming. You're just doing enough to meet your needs, right? Or you're just doing subsistence construction, right?
Yeah.
Then
one
you might
job
as well,
a year.
Yeah, you might as well continue to work for somebody if you're going to do that, right? Because essentially,
you feed your family.
Yeah. And so I would say have a business plan. Now you may think, oh, how am I going to get this done? There are many persons who would do business plans. Let me put a plug in for, let's say, organizations such as a small business development center that have resources, and then there are other individuals who provide those resources. Nothing is free. Everything costs something.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are making that investment into the future development of your business, mm-hmm. it's not going to be so hard. You know, you're not going to feel it as much. You're going to recognize I'm making this investment because I'm going somewhere.
Well, sometimes things don't always have to be traded with money. So let's say I need a business plan, right? Mm-hmm. But you also need some work done in your house.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
I can hang some doors for you.
Absolutely.
I can put some windows. Mm-hmm. I can do some, you know, whatever needs to be done. There's, you know, that system mm-hmm. still works today.
Yeah, we,
you know,
so you
can't always think about, oh well, I don't have the money to do that, but I do have a trade.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you know, those are the kind of things that we need to keep in mind because mm-hmm. a lot of people don't think about what your labor. And what you do as finances.
Yep. Let me say something too, and so we can get back to this after the break. I find, Debbie, that, and Mr. Smith, to the new entrance into construction, generally, it's what you said. They think about building the house. I want them to shift that thought, because the building the house, to me, is the result of you doing the business work. Today, with VAT, business license requirements, national insurance requirements, mm-hmm. you need to properly structure a business to offer services to the public, identify the cost that the business will have to be responsible for mm-hmm. before you go into the construction. Mm-hmm. Too many people, especially in the construction industry, start businesses to do the house, not understanding that they are mostly robbing themselves, robbing the government, and not delivering on the business principles that they mm-hmm. should have. Mm-hmm. I often tell people, you got to get the foundation right first mm-hmm. when you start in construction, because it happens quickly that you have things that you didn't anticipate. And you're in the middle of a job, you overexpose one client who holds you to every single thing that you put on that paper, and you just signed it off and you just didn't expect, like Mr. Smith said, the guy didn't expect you to hold him to the liquidated damage of $500 a day for every day the individual didn't finish on time. He never thought someone would actually do that. And but that's the agreement you signed.
And if you start just building the house, you will continue just building the houses. Mm-hmm. Because you will never get yourself to go into that category unless you have, let's say you're a guy contractor and your wife is looking at your business mm-hmm. and goes, we got to do this better. This mm-hmm. we can't do this like that, right? But sometimes what happens is they don't do that.
No.
If they don't have anybody watching over them.
No, they just.
Yeah, they just, yeah. So we do have to take a break.
Yeah, we do need to take a break right now. I got our producers telling us. So we'll be back right after this short message from our sponsors. All right, now the last people supposed to answer this, either they brand us freeze or a couple of screws was loose.
Not me, bro. I sharp. I get this.
Yeah, you sharp as a button, man.
All right, I can see just how sharp y'all is, because you skip a button on your shirt. Well, anyhow. All right, question is, it doesn't rust.
Uh-huh.
No corrosion. It's lighter and stronger than its opponent. What is it?
I know this. I know, but it's steel?
Nope. Wrong answer. Fiberglass rebar. Y'all ain't sharp.
I go on and say that, no.
You don't even know what that mean.
All right, here's what makes fiber rebar a no-brainer compared to steel. It don't rust. Steel rebar does rust and crack up your wall like biscuit. Two, fiber rebar is lighter than steel. Steel rebar is way more heavier, so that means it costs you more money and labor. And three, coated steel is more expensive than fiber rebar. And with cheap steel, you still have to paint it. Still costs you money. For more information, call Odd Heavy Equipment and Development today at 603-4506 or 822-9527. Fiber rebar is better than steel.
Main purpose for a lot of customers coming in and out these doors is because of the relationship built with them. Once they're comfortable, they could relate to me better.
We don't only sell paint, we sold people.
Some customers need extra patience.
Whatever your paint or patience needs, the entire Sherwin Williams Paints team are ready to show you some good customer service.
Sherwin Williams Bahamas, find color in every day. When we started Storm Frame Windows in 1999, we wanted to fabricate an impact-rated product to compete with the Florida market, and we've done this. There's no fabricator or vendor from Florida that can do what we can in the Bahamas. Because we fabricate locally and we're a local-based company, we have the capability to provide better customer service than our competitors. With all the worldwide supply chain issues, we at Storm Frame have improved our fabrication process and have invested in stock to be able to produce our orders in 4 weeks. We also keep in stock over 400 windows and doors at standard sizes for walk-in customers to purchase. Our professional sales staff is here to assist you with the complete purchase and installation. We also service and ship to the outhouses.
Thank you for your support, Bahamas.
Thank you for your support, Bahamas.
When I wake up in the morning and I take a walk outside, I see the sunshine, I see a new day, and that feeling puts a smile right on my face. I know just what to do, go to the paint place. So if you wanna paint it right the first time, go to the paint place, stop at the paint place. And if you want it to last a lifetime, go to the paint place, stop at the paint place.
The all-new CBSBahamas.com is faster, smarter, and we've made it even easier to browse our inventory of over 11,000 products. Earn reward points with every online purchase. Check out our new AI-powered chat assistant, available 24/7. You can even select a date and time for items to be delivered to your house, job site, or the mailboat. Our Family Island customers are loving it. Build beautiful throughout the Bahamas with the new CBSBahamas.com.
Guardian Radio 96.9. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back to Nail It on Guardian 96.9 FM, having a wonderful discussion with Mr. Dave Smith and Debbie Deal and myself. Debbie, you want to go ahead with our sponsors?
Yes, I do. This show is sponsored by the or put on by the Bahamian Contractors Association. It's not the Leonard and Debbie show. It's the Bahamian Contractor Show. We are just the ones. We're the voice for the construction industry on this show. And we are so grateful. We couldn't do it without sponsors, you know, because the BCA is a nonprofit organization.
Absolutely.
We keep the doors open, but they're not wide open. So I like that.
We keep the doors open, but they're not wide open.
Yeah, we just, you know, the air conditioning and all that stuff, kind of stuff. But anyway, I just want to be, we're so grateful. And I'm going to mention a few that we have today. We have ART Development. That's the company that has the fiberglass rebar.
Mm-hmm.
We have CBS Bahamas, which everybody knows. We have Engineering and Technical Services, ETS, which is Lambert Knowles.
Great engineer.
Yes. The Paint Place, we have Stone Oak Bahamas, and we have Sherwin Williams. So thank you very, very much for...
We also have our sponsors for our Mix and Mingle. We have Simplified Lending. We also have...
Closets, etc.
We also have Wosley. We also have Trusco.
Yes.
We also have... What do we also have? Closets, etc.
Hey, we did that one.
We did that one. We also have...
Superior Walls.
Yes. You can't forget Superior Walls. Yes. They wanted to bring the rig at the Mix and Mingle. It's a 20-foot rig. that has one of the full wall panels that they do with the reinforced concrete wall system.
Yeah.
I like if we could get it parked at the yacht club.
I did speak to the manager.
What did they say?
And she said they spoke to the board, and the board said no. Because they
it takes up a lot of space.
Because they are members,
yeah.
They should maybe speak to the board directly and see if there's anything they can do.
But it's a real size sample of a whole wall system, which I think it'd be pretty cool for our members to walk past and see. Because it is a really, really brilliant, intelligent building system.
It is.
So we are very excited about our Mix and Mingles. We have a lot of industry partners have supported us with this Mix and Mingle, and we're very thankful to them. And we certainly hope that they're going to make sure their staff comes out and we have a good time. Mm-hmm. To date, we have allotted over 130 tickets for between the sponsors and paid tickets so far, already 130. And we know we generally got another 40 at the door. So we're probably going to have close to 170 places.
This will be way more than we've had before.
Yeah,
this is awesome.
It is awesome.
This is awesome.
Thank you, everyone, for determining that you want to be a part of the Mix and Mingle. The construction community, Mr. Smith, is attempting to be more involved with each other. And this is something that Debbie and I always talk about. We're too siloed, and construction isn't siloed. For me to build a house, I have to involve an electrician, a plumber, a drywaller, a carpenter, a block mason, a roofing
sending him a message saying,
everyone.
Who do you get to clean up your project?
Exactly.
Someone who does
post-construction cleaning. It's involved with so much people. Mm-hmm. We can't be siloed. So our whole thought process is that let's get together once a quarter and let's just talk with each other. Last time we carried on the job, they had to run us. We was there for a long time, just talking shop.
And it's 2 hours of free bar, open bar.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think the first 2 hours, and then we got sponsors for the next hour and a half. You forget it. Because it's 6:30, 8:30, the ones we already paid for. And then our boss wants us to do the next 2 hours.
I thought we did it. I thought we were doing it in reverse. Okay.
No, so we got 4 hours of open bar. Mm-hmm. No spot in Nassau has 4 hours, and Mr. Smith, I know you don't partake, 4 hours open bar. I'm just telling you, the contractors will be out there in full effect tomorrow. SMG, I saw they had their whole staff. I got 15 tickets from them today.
Wow.
And we invited, he said, we don't want individual, not say we don't want, but we invited companies to bring their staff.
Right.
Let's meet the people in the companies.
Yeah, because they're the ones who actually are dealing with the people on a regular basis.
Let's meet the people in the companies, man. Owners are cool, but I want to see the person who I send my estimate to for something.
Yes.
I want to see that person.
The guy that I'm calling on a regular
basis.
All
the time,
hey, listen,
I want to see that individual.
Yeah,
so it's going to be a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, it is. Wow.
All right, so let's get back into this. So, Mr. Smith, we ended before we got to the break about about operating as a business. Why is it important? Mm-hmm. Now, you are presenting at the BCA's luncheon this month, along with Robert Ritchie from... Ritchie's on the show next week from...
Eustacia and Robert
Ritchie. Bahama Safety Solutions.
Yes.
But you are presenting on the show. I'm sorry, at our luncheon. Next week, Wednesday. Tell us about what is your presentation of going to be about for the contractors. I know we was talking about it, but give them the intro of what you're going to talk about.
Well, I'm also a corporate service practitioner. So in terms of incorporating companies and that kind of thing, that I do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'll be presenting is... the process to incorporate a company. You heard a little bit about why. Again, why is because you get to protect your personal wealth in terms of what you accumulate over the years. Also, a company enables growth. So it's easier to expand if you need capital, that kind of stuff, if it's in a company's name as opposed to
the personal name.
As a person something. Also, it improves credibility. So even in terms of landing more substantive contracts,
I agree.
Persons would prefer to deal with a company as opposed to an individual.
Mm-hmm.
And then also it eases your...
protected.
Yes, they feel protected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it also eases access to financing in terms of your banking, et cetera. So that's some of the benefits of incorporating the company. Now, I know for some people, there tends to be a thought, well, oh, this is going to be so expensive, mm-hmm. et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I think, like with anything, it's a matter of choosing a reliable service provider and then shopping around.
I agree.
Right? I agree. Because all prices are not the same. Mm-hmm. All right? So someone may charge you X to do something, and then mm-hmm. someone else may charge you X plus one to, mm-hmm, do,
to
something.
Do something. Yeah.
So, and then a lot of it depends on complexity, that kind of thing. So mm-hmm. I would say it's worth exploring. At the end of the day, I like to boil things down in life to a dichotomy of choice, right? Simple. Will it hurt or will it help?
I like that.
But you and I were talking downstairs before we came up, and basically, it looks like between $2,000 and $3,000, yeah, something like that, to actually do it. So mm-hmm. people need to have some kind of a ballpark figure,
yeah, so they can appreciate that.
Just so they have an idea of how can I actually, if I can't do it this year financially, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, I can plan that next year I will do this.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, let me say this, because Leonard spoke so kindly of me today.
I tried.
You're lucky you heard them. They didn't speak kindly about another guy. Sorry.
You know, and understanding, you know, the need that everybody's not in the same position, yeah, and all, mm-hmm, of that. Certainly, as with any business, special packages or offers, mm-hmm, could be made for, you know, members.
Mm-hmm.
Members.
Of the BCA.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, of the we BCA.
We like that. We, yeah, membership as is privileges. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So on average, just as a ballpark, right? Because, you know, the different prices, different entities do different prices. You can do the competitive analysis, et cetera. But in terms of the fixed cost, roughly to incorporate a company, in terms of what the government takes, it's about $600, $585, somewhere there, right? Mm-hmm. That's fees to the government. Mm-hmm. So outside of that, then, it's what the service provider charges for doing all of that. Uh-huh. Right. And then on an ongoing basis, typically to maintain a company, a Bahamian company, it's about $350, mm-hmm, a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you need to have a registered office agent, that, mm-hmm, kind of thing. So, mm-hmm, then there are fees on an annual basis for that. But into that, yeah, the meeting. Yeah.
Mr. Smith, let me say this. I started my construction company back in 2011. Obviously, one of your associates in the businesses did my corporation, Mr. Enric Delvo. I think he's now president of the
Compliance Association.
Yes. He did my incorporation documents. And what he explained to me at the time, which I always remember, he said, Science, you're going to start a company. And this is when I opened up my office on Nassau Street. Like I said, I've been in this area my entire life. I grew up in this area, put my business in this area. He said, you want to make sure you limit your exposure. He said, businesses have to appreciate that risk and exposure happens in business.
Mm-hmm.
Limited. Secondly, you're going to deal with customers who don't want to see you say, give me the check in Leonard Sands name.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I do my business. So I remember the first thing. I did my first job when I opened up my office. I got a client in Sandyport. They gave me a check for $250,000 on a Saturday and went for a 2-month vacation. Because I was a limited liability company, they had no issue with it. I took it to my bank. I deposited it. I did get flagged from my bank because I told them I do between $25,000 and $50,000 a month. Mm-hmm. And here am I depositing $250,000. But they say, you know, you may want to up your limit. Mm-hmm. Since that time, I didn't have any challenge. But I recognize it was comfortable for them to know that they were handing a $250,000 mm-hmm. check to the company limited rather than
Leonard Sands.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now that's one side of it. Now I'll tell you the flip side of it. So I'm doing another business transaction, contract signing, and the client is looking for my name. So I have a company seal, I've stamped it and ready to sign as director. So where's your name? I say, I'm going to sign as the director of the company which mm-hmm. I own. Mm-hmm. So, but your name is not, I say, I am employed by my company.
Mm-hmm.
I am not my company. The company is doing the job mm-hmm. for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the director of the company. And people somehow don't, I say, I find it interesting that Bahamians want the benefit of that, but don't appreciate what that means. I'll tell people like this. you're not going to see, and I know them because I used to be employed by them, you're not going to see the owners of the fast food restaurants signing documents mm-hmm. as themselves. Mm-hmm. They will sign as the president of the company.
Mm-hmm. Or they'll have a financial controller.
Or the CFO will, yeah. Mm-hmm. Why do you want me to sign me mm-hmm. on this document? I'm an employee of the company.
Because they met you, and that's they feel comfortable.
But I'm an agent.
You might have just been a salesperson.
Exactly. I'm only the salesperson for my company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The final thing was, I remember going to visit, going to NIB, and obviously I have two, because I have two NIB numbers. Not me personally. I have an NIB number for the company. Because mm-hmm. it has, which is a mm-hmm. weird thing for it, because it's still attached, weirdly, to me. Mm-hmm. But I have a NIB number for the company, and I have a personal NIB number. Mm-hmm. So I was telling them, as an employee, I pay this amount, but I could only pay one NIB at a time. Mm-hmm. So when I'm not an employee of somebody, I then switch over to be an employee of my company. And my NIB is under that company. Because I've had both at the same time. Mm-hmm. But I often tell them, when you're looking at it. It's the weirdest thing. I say, when you're looking at it, I'm employed by the construction company. I am not the construction company. And I want the business community to understand. I don't like to see contractors being the construction company. Everyone should have a limited liability company. Mr. Smith is advocating this cause, and him and I had this conversation again. I think it is very risky, especially when, see, Debbie is a little different. Debbie deals with relationship clients only. That's Debbie's market. And she'd built up the trust with a few partners for many, many years. They're a relationship partner. If you're just going out and doing business with anyone, you don't want to be doing business as Debbie Deal. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be doing business as Dave Smith. You want to be doing business at your company, because relationships go foul. And they're not going to sue you. They can sue my company. I don't have no problem suing my company, you know, because I have a limited liability company. What limited liability means is my exposure is limited. Mm-hmm. Your exposure personally is unlimited. That means mm-hmm. they will come for your house. Mm-hmm. And I said, when I'm doing this, and I mentioned my wife, I don't want them to come for my wife's house. They can come for whatever my exposure is as the director, mm-hmm. but they can't come for the house. That's the protection that I want every contractor to think about. What are you exposed to? What is your family exposed to? Because you're not a limited liability entity doing business in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas.
Well, I think you made a good point. Let me say this to try to make a distinction here. I think there should be a clear distinction between a contractor and a tradesman.
Mm-hmm.
You could be a tradesman.
Mm-hmm.
And not be incorporated.
Absolutely.
But if you say you're a contractor, that should have a different meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And let me just also add, and I'm going to go back to, you know, the 60s sort of Bahamian vernacular, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to be seen as a fly-by-night construction person, right? Yeah. So I think the company brings a certain level of credibility as well.
I think so, too.
And that should also open more doors. And so I think when you look at the cost of doing something, again, that's why I go back to say, don't look at the business today. Look at the business tomorrow. Right? So if you look at the cost, you may say, oh, this is a lot today, but that is an investment in your tomorrow. And you have to work that to get to your tomorrow.
Yes.
You know, so when you talk about starting a company, and I go back to your question, say someone new coming in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind it's not gonna happen overnight.
No.
It might take three years before you get to any stride.
Mm-hmm.
So it requires a lot of patience, all right, and discipline. So that's important. The discipline and the patience, I think, is very important when you're venturing out into a business.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Ms. Smith, we got a caller. Let's see what they got to say. Caller, you're live. Go ahead.
Hi. I heard, first of all, I love your show. I think it's very interesting and very informative.
Thank you.
I love the man-woman presentation.
Thank you very much.
I think Debbie Deal is wonderful being in that male-oriented business. I am a potential customer. I am a fellow professional, and I just love the show. It's great.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes, thanks for
appreciate that call.
You're welcome. I also called in because I heard you all talking about the limited liability aspect of a company.
Mm-hmm.
Something I wanted to remind folks about, because often we have companies, but we don't utilize them properly. And then somebody who comes after you and your company can prove your company's a sham and get into your personal pocketbook, even though you had the limited liability company.
Explain that to me, please.
No problem. So this is happened with my dad. He had a company,
mm-hmm.
and he would take the company check to pay my private school mm-hmm. bill.
Okay.
And you can't do it that way, because then the company's paying the shareholders' personal bills. It is not
right. And once
but
that was exposed.
Especially with smaller companies, folks do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's usually a patriarch.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, it's my company and my money, so I can do what
I can
I
do
want.
What I please, yeah.
Yeah. But the problem is, when you do that, you expose your company to a successful claim that it is a sham company.
Mm.
You lose your limited liability.
Ability status, yeah.
You lose a case, and the people are going to be able to successfully come after company assets. And your personal assets, and your wife may lose her house.
Yeah, we don't want that.
Wow.
And you might might lose your wife.
Yeah. Yeah, if you lose the house, you can lose your wife.
No,
I'll tell you that.
So some people are going to be saying, oh, I don't want that to happen. Some people are going, oh, that's a good idea.
Yes.
Oh, wow. I'm so sorry for that
thank you.
Happening.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much. I didn't think about that.
Yeah,
I didn't think about that.
Well, I think it goes back to what we were saying at the beginning about keeping, you know, the company business separate from your personal business.
Yes.
And that's important. Let me just make the point again. I will constantly give this disclaimer that I am not an attorney.
Of course not.
But there are case law around this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while it might not be a lot in the Bahamas, in the Commonwealth of the
Bahamas yeah.
there's case law in the Commonwealth jurisdictions, which are applicable in the Bahamas. And there are cases where someone would reach out and say, well, this happened in the Cayman Islands,
mm-hmm.
and now precedent has been set, and now that comes over in the Bahamas. So mm-hmm. even though these things may appear to be far away,
mm-hmm.
you know, and think about it, the reality is, again, as we become more litigious, et cetera, and think about it, a house is a huge investment.
It is. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
so it's not
buying a car,
it's not buying a motorcycle,
you know, and you could be investing 25 years into this,
mm-hmm.
you know, paying back that mortgage, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So that's a weighty investment. And if I'm going to spend 30 years doing something, I want it done well. Yeah. I want to know that I got the best value for money. I want to know I got the best craftsmanship, et cetera.
We got two calls coming to me. Let's take this first call quick. Call you live. Go ahead.
Yes, good evening, Sir Leonard.
Good evening.
Debbie Deb.
Hi.
How you doing?
We're good. We're good.
Who's your guest?
Our guest is Mr. Dave Smith.
Dave Smith, he's an attorney?
He is not an attorney. He said that before time. He is not an attorney, but he knows a lot because he's been in banking for 40 years and he's a financial professional.
Uh-huh. Okay, I just chimed in and I hear him going back and forth about the issues with the company and the limited this and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened? I have a situation with my case and with my properties
mm-hmm.
and my company name. And day before yesterday, made 2 years and 5 months that I wrote to the investment board. To ask for the status of the matter.
Mm-hmm.
And these agreements are in my company's name, and their lawyers are trying mm-hmm. to, since last year in July, make application trying to come after me and my directors. The problem with them is they never got investment board approval.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Since 2001, 2002. And you know what I mean? And under the International Persons Land Holding Act. You see what I'm saying?
I understand. I understand.
Right. So, but now they want to, and I said since July, try to come after my name and my directors and, you know, and everybody associated with my company's name, which are limited companies. And you don't believe it. They're represented by top lawyer from, you know what I mean? Let's just say Higgs and Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, and as he's saying, it's limited. But like I said, which was the agreements that they had signed with my companies, and I'm the owner, and my companies are owners of the properties, but they never got investment board approval, they didn't get civil aviation approval, they didn't get Ministry of Works approval, none of those sort of stuff. So what are you saying with the limited, you know, with the limited company, they, so I can't, you know, you see where I'm coming from.
But bad things happen even when you have the right things in place. So we just, and sorry to hear about your situation. I'm just saying that even with you did the right thing, right?
Yeah.
But what it does, though, it still protects you. Even though things didn't happen right, you still are protected for the exposure that you would not be protected from if you did not have a limited liability entity.
Yeah, and like I said, day before yesterday, made 3 years since the 14th of November, 2002, that I wrote to the investment board and asked them for an update status of the agreements that we signed with the company, with the companies, and I didn't get any response.
But you could litigate it. You could litigate it. But you could litigate it. Yeah.
Director of Investment, who answers to the Deputy Prime Minister.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he is in charge of aviation and investment. So that's two separate ministries, and they haven't never responded to my letter.
Slow progress.
Caller, thank you very much for calling. Yeah, I mean, Mr. Smith, that's a tricky one. Yeah. That's a tricky one.
Yeah, I do think perhaps he needs to retain legal counsel at his end. I didn't quite get a fulsome understanding of what the actual issue was. But if you have a limited liability company and if you're not operating it properly, then you could be exposed to certain things. And let me just say also, directors of limited liability companies, and this is a thing in country in terms of directors not understanding their particular obligations as directors, because you're not just sitting on a board and getting a stipend or remuneration or whatever. You have responsibilities facing the company, and so you have to also fulfill that role professionally, with integrity and with a certain level of prudence as well.
Because if the company is being sued and the board was part of doing whatever it was that they're getting sued for, all of those board members can also be sued. And that has happened to somebody that I know personally.
Correct.
And it was a devastating blow in midlife. Mm-hmm. That's all I can say.
And it's not unique to the construction industry. This is the same situation in financial services as well. Mm-hmm. So another reason why, even though, you know, as a construction company, you may have, liability insurance, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
In financial services, for example, all financial institutions do have that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But they also have what they call directors and officers
insurance. Yes.
For the same reason that you could be sued as a director in your personal capacity.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so it's important to have your business structured properly.
I love this. I can't wait for
that.
Yeah,
because you know, this is huge. Again, how do you, when do these things get done? When you find out the wrong way.
When it's too late.
Yeah, when it's too late.
So, Mrs. Smith, we are fresh out of time. I got to give you the parting thoughts. What are your parting thoughts? You want the public to know. I want the public to know. Everyone could come to the to our luncheon. Mm-hmm. That's next Wednesday, 12 p.m. Mm-hmm. at the Balmoral Club. Mm-hmm. Mr. Smith will be presenting on
the benefit of incorporating a company as opposed to trading as.
Yes, and I am a firm believer, because I have a limited liability company and I would not do business without being a limited liability company. Mm-hmm. So I want persons to come out. Contractors, please take the time, come out, learn something that could aid you in your business dealings, because we all want to do plenty of work. We all want to enjoy doing work. But like Debbie, you know, I'd like to have this fantastic $5 million house you have on Eastern Road, but I also don't want somebody to come for that $5 million house, too.
I wish it was $5 million. Not quite $5 million, but I love the fact that you're very optimistic.
I've reevaluated your property. It's $5 million.
I just love him. He just.
I don't think you want your property reevaluated, because the VAT man will come.
Come for your baby.
You know, Inland Revenue will be there for your property tax.
And the property taxes.
Oh, yeah. Okay, no. Debbie's house is not $5 million. Mr. Wilson, it is not $5 million. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have had a fantastic show.
Setting me up.
Yeah, I can't set up my friend like that.
No, I just
we have a fantastic show. Mr. Smith, thank you very much for coming out and sharing with us. And we are looking forward to your presentation on Wednesday at the luncheon for the Bahamian Contract Association.
And tomorrow
everyone is invited. Come out and learn something about incorporation.
And they have great food, by the way.
Yeah.
They have a good menu, yes. And drinks, whatever you want to do. And tomorrow night is our
Mix and Mingle. We're going to have a fantastic get-together with contractors.
We're just going to have a lot of fun.
I will tell everyone right now, come there early. Parking is going to be a mess. Yeah. Last time we took over the whole Montague. It's that much people. So all the contractors on the island will be at the yacht club tomorrow. So that's the reality of the situation. Right. Come prepared. Ladies and gentlemen, that's us. Thank you for another exciting show, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Thank you, too.
Good night, everybody.